Glad you're here this morning. We're going to continue on in our series that we've been doing in Sunday schools here and there, and a few times on Sunday night about biblical leadership and some qualities and characteristics, again, that not just people in positions of leadership need, but we all need them as well. And again, as we've tried to reiterate many times, we all can be in a position of leadership. God calls us to influence those in our sphere, whether it's in our home, maybe we're serving in the church, maybe we're in our community or job, whatever it might be. We have people that we come into contact with, people that we can influence, and that we can do that for the cause of Christ. Last time, I believe it was on a Sunday night, we talked about this one real quick. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3. So let's go back to that passage as we review. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3, because I tell you, there's been a mindset that a position equals power. You know, hear the statements like, well, that just goes to their head. The authority goes to their head. You ever heard anything like that? Then they just act illogically. I grew up in North Carolina, and I have experience in this, unfortunately. The state troopers there. So, like, you know, the way I know them in North Carolina is the way Michael knows the Florida ones. With so many miles that he drives, it's just inevitable. They have this gauge where they put it on Michael's tires on his dump truck, and they're like, I think the pressure's off a little bit. Let's pull this guy over today. And then Mike's just, as they do full inspection, I like to keep you on your toes, Mike. Well, I remember talking to some people, because sometimes they had a reputation for just being just mean. I mean, you ran a red light or, whatever, you speed or whatever they did, and they caught you, and you're like, well, they got me, I'm wrong. They're just mean and things like that, and just had this attitude of just, I'm just this big bad guy. And I was talking to a friend of mine one time about that used to be a state trooper, and he said, the way they put them through those academies, it's tougher than like the military, the Marines and things, and those guys come out with chips on their shoulder ready to like destroy the world, is what he said about the North Carolina ones anyway. So it kind of gave me a perspective. I was like, oh, okay, so don't get these guys on my bad side, right? No. But sometimes power or a simple position just goes to somebody's head. You even see it when you're, you see it if you are around children or if you have your own kids, and the older sibling is going to tell the younger sibling what to do, right? I'm the big brother. I'm the big sister, right? And they're going to tell the little one. And then all of a sudden, there's this big fight and thing. Nicole, you know anything about that? No. Yeah, I was painting at her house yesterday, and I saw Cassie a little bit telling Roman a few things, and it worked. And then Adrian has to tell Cassie a few things, because I'm in the position of the older, right? So I'm automatically right. You have to do what I say, whether I'm right, wrong, or indifferent. No community, no back and forth. It's just no flexibility. This is it. And sadly, sometimes in the spiritual world, and Peter recognized this way back in the early church, that the position might go to somebody's head. I'm using that phrase that kind of is familiar with us. Chapter 5, verse 1. Well, verse 2. Feed the flock of God. He's talking to the elders. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof. Somebody's got to be in charge. Got to take the oversight. Got to lead. However, not by constraint, but willingly. Not for filthy lucre or money. Sadly, we see a lot of that today, those charlatans or whatever word they use for those that are in it for the money. I remember I told you about when I was a kid, it was in the 90s. Like I told the kids in chapel the other day, I said, when I was a teenager back in the 1900s, when they had covered wagons, they're just 1900s. They can't process that. I was like, the 1990s, and then there's the 38 specials, right? And even farther back, but the 1900s, way back then, I remember the stories on the news and things of Jim Baker. Do anybody remember that? Right? He was like one of those, I don't know, remember all the details. I was a kid. But apparently he got super wealthy off of the church, right? And those things he had, like in his bathrooms, he had gold faucets, golden toilets. I'm like, number one, I got a lot better things to do with gold than make a toilet out of it. I can tell you that. My goodness. But just, ornate, elaborate, just over the top. I think he went to prison. I'm pretty sure he went to prison. It wasn't his wife's name, like Tammy Faye or something. And it was the whole, I just remember as a kid just being on the news and things, and I never knew all the stories. But, that's kind of one of those, I'm in this position, so I'm going to do all this other stuff. The Falwell situation that happened recently, just the past 5 years or so at Liberty, where the president got caught with all that, Jerry Falwell Jr., I think his name was. I don't remember all the details, but you know, all that terrible things they were doing and spending money lavishly and getting involved with adultery and all these other things. It's unbelievable. And sometimes you get in this position of, oh, I'm in it for the money or whatever. Not for filthy lucre and all the things we can just really abuse it and make ourselves wealthy. But of a ready mind, verse 3, here it is. Neither as being lords or overruling over God's heritage. And that's really kind of the problem, is when we see things as mine instead of God's. When I see the ministry as my ministry instead of this is God's ministry, and He's graciously, for some weird reason that I can't understand, allowing me to be involved. But when we think, look at all this that I've done, it is me, 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 and everybody's got to be loyal to me, and it's all about me. That's lording. And it really causes some issues, some conflict and things with those that are in God's flock. Be an example to the flock. Be that servant leader that we've discussed. We talked about strength under control. Strength under control. Having self-control. Yeah, there might be a situation where you have to act, you have to do things, but doing it under control. You know, there's a difference between sometimes you got to take out the howitzer and the bazooka and you got to blow something up. Other times, you can deal with things more delicately. You have to understand those things and be able to have that right use of power depending on those situations. This can bring, and this is where we ended last time, some disabilities. If you don't have the right view of leadership and power, there are some disabilities that you can then have as a leader. So we'll take a little side note here. I just wanted to put a couple of them up on the board. The first one is that I am my position. Is it a job? Is it a position? Or is it truly a ministry? So people can describe, you know, the tasks we do every day, and I do my job, I put my time in, I'm coping with forces that are outside of my control, and it's just the mundane job responsibilities versus seeing what I'm doing for the Lord as a ministry. And as a leader, you have to inspire people to see that it's a ministry. It's not just a job. It's not just putting in the hours and, you know, worrying about all those things. It's a ministry for the Lord. You know, anyone can have a job, right? I mean, we all hopefully have one. Of course, today they're encouraging people just not to work, just government provide for everybody, but that's a side note that we will not digress on. But, you know, we can have a job, but what about making that situation into a ministry? So I can go above and beyond in certain things. It's like, oh, it is 4 o'clock. It is time to get out of here. I can't tell you the amount of times that people here in our ministry stay late and do things and do extra and catch up on things and, you know, whatever situation might happen after hours. And it's like, you know, you always don't want to do it. It's drudgery, right? I remember a few years ago, 2019, when we won, I think that's when we won soccer championship. And we were hosting the final game. And I was so excited. I was going to watch the game. My sons were playing in the game. And so we have all these people on campus. There's a tournament inside the gym, volleyball, and then there's the soccer outside. And I remember someone coming up and saying, man, over there by the campsites, there is like water pouring out everywhere. I'm like, oh, great. What happened? So I had to leave the game, go over to the campsite. I had no idea what to do because I'm not a plumber, but I called Chris and he showed me, like, we'll find this and this and turn the water off and we'll deal with it later. So I'm standing in water this deep, you know, digging in my hands and knees trying to find this valve box, found it, turn the water off, and come back, and I missed Seth scoring from 3/4 of the field. I was like, oh man, I missed that. But I mean, hey, that's part of it. You miss out on things. You don't get to, we've got to handle the situation. I can't tell you how many times the pastor goes and cleans up somebody threw up in the carpet, and you see him take, we kind of know we have a lot of names for it, the walk of shame with the carpet excavator, you know, and the extractor, you know. I don't know, I don't want to gross anybody out, but back at the beginning of the school year, we had a weird, mysterious poop trail in the hallway where some little kid apparently had something and then it fell out and he stepped in it and walked it all the way down the hallway. And this is like, now it's like 4:30, 5 o'clock, you know, it's Friday. I'm like, you know, let's get out of here. And Todd and I are walking down the hall. He's like, what's that smell? There was not a perpetrator, but a pooper trader somewhere. So here we spent the next hour cleaning, you know, getting things ready. It's, you know, I'm not saying that just to say, I'm just saying you just do things. You just do things. You guys know that if you're a parent, right? Things are always happening that are maybe a mess, or, you know, this spill and this, you know, things always happen with kids and things. My wife and I decided that we need a new couch. It's really like, you know, you sit in it, you kind of sink down. It's like, we're not getting anything until all these kids are gone. We're just going to suffer through, because it just, you know, it'll just get ruined again, right, John? Just like, I have stories, but I won't go into that, you know, when kids and diapers and all those kind of things. But I was always good to be there to help my wife clean those up. And yes, sir, I tried one time and it was horrible. There was a pile of wet wipes about this big on the floor, and Seth just rolling around. And like, Megan got back from the store, I said, don't ever do that to me again. I had no idea what I was doing. Poor boy, probably had rash for 3 weeks. I don't know. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. Anyway, do the job. It is a job, but it's also a ministry, which means I understand why I am doing what I'm doing. It should be for the Lord and having that mindset and that vision. So I'm more than just a position or a job. Here's another thing. Many times in leaders, this is a disability of leadership. The enemy is out there. In other words, it's not me. It's not me. It's always somebody else. You know, blame shifting, that's a big deal, right? We learn, we don't have to be taught that as kids, right? Any of you that have children, you know this. Mom or dad comes in, what is this? What happened here? My brother, he made me do it. Or whatever they say. There's always somebody else's fault, blame shifting, those type of things. Well, that's a sad thing to be if you're in leadership and it's always somebody else's fault. Sure, it might be. But have you ever, as a leader, had to apologize because the buck stops with you? Yeah, that's a hard one. But hey, that's part of it. The enemy's not out there. The enemy, many times we need to evaluate, what are we doing? Are we quick to blame people for our problems? Are we willing to look at what we are doing and take personal responsibility? Our culture today, it's always somebody else's fault. It's always somebody else's fault. You know, we tell the stories of, you know, the baseball player, and he misses the ball at shortstop, and then he's like looking for a rock, and, you know, man, a rock got me, throws it off the field. And we didn't have those excuses. We were just terrible, right, Mike? Or, you know, I kicked and, oh, my shoe was untied. That's why the soccer ball, let me fix that. Yeah, it's always something. Yeah, the pastor always says a poor musician blames his instrument, right? This trumpet, what is wrong with this thing? No, it's take responsibility, investigate. It's not out there blaming on other people, but we're all in this together. Here's another one, the illusion of taking charge. So we always talk about, well, I'm going to take charge. I'm going to be the one in management solving the problems. But proactiveness, true proactiveness, often comes from investigating, well, where are the problems and how maybe I'm contributing to it. Leadership isn't just taking charge and just checking off a box. All right, we got those things done today. It also involves looking forward. It involves looking back. It involves evaluating those things and being a proactive leader. Here's another, just going through quick some things. Fixation on events. This sounds kind of weird, but we think that leadership is successful or not successful because of the way an event came out, right? Okay, so we planned everything. And this is big in our corporate world, not necessarily ministry, but in the corporate world, you know, they plan and all these things that they do for this certain event. And everything just is dominated by getting this event. And we look at the event and we see, is the event a success or is a failure? And that's how we gauge everything that happened. Well, that's not necessarily true. You can actually do everything you're supposed to do and then the event have some issues or failures. That doesn't mean that, oh, I'm going to go fire everybody that was involved with that. You know, some people react like that. It's just, well, the event didn't work, and we just, instead of being introspective and looking, how could I have done better to improve things? And then here's another quick one. That busyness is greater than awareness. And this is a hard one because in ministry, we are busy. We're always busy. We're busy doing so many things that have to be done. And there's, you know, shortages of staff or, you know, people that get sick, and you just run the marathon all day. And because you're busy, you might think, I'm doing the job. When in reality, You need to be aware of what's happening. It's really hard if you're busy. It's really hard. But there needs to be some time for awareness to be able to recognize what the needs are and how to move forward. But if I don't have the right type of leadership, if I go back to this, you know, wrong use of power, lording over the flock, then I'm not going to recognize other issues that can develop as a result. I want to move on quickly and get to the next point. Another quality of biblical leadership is involvement. Go to Mark chapter 3. Mark chapter 3. We hear the phrases like, you know, an ivory tower. I'm going to sit in the ivory tower, not be involved. I'm separated in. Look at chapter 3, verse 14. Now, this is simple, but I think sometimes it gets overlooked. And when he, verse 13, he goeth up into a mountain and calleth unto him whom he would, and they came unto him, and he ordained 12 that they should be with him. First, involvement, and that he might send them forth to preach. Why were those disciples prepared to eventually go and to speak? It's because there was an involvement on the Lord's part. He had them come that they should be with him. You know, phrases like getting your hands dirty in the work, getting in there and getting involved. I've alluded to that many times. You know, cleaning the hallway. I know that's a silly example, but things, you got to get in there and get it done. You got to work alongside. You got to work with. You have to be willing to show that, yes, I might be in this position of leadership. I might be managing, but we all are working together to get this job done. Detached leadership. I don't know who said this, but I have it in my notes. It's a military phrase, but detached leadership places the leader and the troops in peril. Yeah, I remember, I look back at history. And I think, you know, like the Revolutionary War days and those kind of things. How would you love to be a soldier? All right, so all of you guys line up in this line, okay? And all of us, we're going to line up in another line. We're going to stand face to face with each other, hold our guns at each other, and take turns firing. I mean, that's literally the... And then the British got mad that the Americans were like doing the, you know, Minutemen type things where they would ambush them and jump out of the trees and attack them on the trails. Oh, this is unethical. Like, unethical? This is just dumb. I mean, I don't know. I look back at that and I'm like, how in the world? You want to talk about courage and bravery? I'm going to tell you what, that was a different breed of men right there. But, you know, they had like the Cornwallises, and he would stand way back on the hill with the binoculars, right? You've seen that? And he's watching row after row of his men getting slaughtered and the cannonballs buzzing through. And he's way off in the back, just kind of watching. All right, it was so regimented and strategic that you're just trying to overwhelm the other side by numbers, you know. I look at that and I'm like, goodness gracious, I couldn't do it. But, you know, he was way off in the hill watching kind of thing. Not willing to get involved, get in with the situation. It also means listening and serving. Now, I don't want to be, you know, wrong about this, or there's a balance in this, what I'm trying to say. I don't want to be extreme with it. Leadership have to make decisions, and they have a lot more information and a different perspective than employees or whoever's under them. That's just reality. And so leadership has to look at a variety of things to make their decision. But included in that should be, do you desire to even hear feedback from those that are working under you? Now, you may say, look, I appreciate that, but here's why we can't do that. Or, you know, they may have to trust. That's no problem. There's a balance is what I'm trying to say. You have information and perspectives and the whole vision mentality and outlook that you have to make decisions with. But part of that is being able to listen. I would say, who's in, like here at the school, who's in the trenches every day? Those teachers in the classroom are. They're in there, and it's easy to forget what that's like. It's easy to become detached and not involved, and it gets tough after a while. Being able to listen to how can things improve, how can things get better, and then taking all of that information, not just one part of it, that's where the balance comes in, because as a leader, again, you see a wider range of things, and you make the decision, and those under you have to trust that decision. But listening, serving, those are different ways that you can be involved. And I'll tell you another just side note is, if you're willing to be involved with your people, and then they are involved with you, It builds a sense of loyalty. There's a difference between building a sense of loyalty and demanding loyalty. If you demand loyalty, you will not get it. Period. You won't. If you build a sense of loyalty, it will be from their heart, willingly, that they're loyal to what they're doing, maybe the ministry, the cause of the mission for the Lord Jesus Christ, all those things involved with building that mentality. Go to Nehemiah chapter 3. We could look at a number of passages in the Scripture. I just chose one quick one about involvement. I mean, we could look at tons of Scriptures, but I just chose just one simple one. Nehemiah chapter 3. So there was leadership, Nehemiah, and he had the high priest and those that were with him serving. Look at chapter 3, verse 1. Then Eliashib, the high priest. Now this is the top priest, the top Levite in the entire group of people that were there. He rose up with his brethren, the priests, and they builded the sheep gate. So he was actually involved with doing the actual work. There's something to be said for that. Do you think when people saw Eliashib working, then the rest of the chapter goes down to every person that was involved building at each of these gates? But do you think they were encouraged by seeing Eliashib's out here with his priests and they're building, that they're doing the work? Boy, I'm going to get in there too and get mine done. There was some delegating, Kevin, that you could have, you know, been involved with, but Kevin likes to delegate. We joke about that. But I did catch him inadvertently on a ladder the other day, so he's making some progress. But Roy, poor Roy, I tell you, it's all right, though. It's all right. He's learned how to delegate, and he's good at it. And can you blame him? No. But there's delegating and things of that nature. But there's also involvement. And here's the high priest being involved with building that gate and setting up the doors, even to the tower. And they sanctified it under the tower of Haniel. They did a whole section, and then they sanctified it to the Lord. And I bet that was, you know, it's interesting to me that that's the first one mentioned. And I believe there was an encouragement, a visible encouragement for these people that were, yeah, it's a tough situation here in this land trying to rebuild the city, and the enemy is Sanballat and Tobiah and all them making fun of them and all these things going on. It was an encouragement to them to see, we are all in this together. And rather than trying to seek loyalty to a person, sure, to an extent, it's loyalty to a cause. And I think sometimes if you get the leader that's not following 1 Peter chapter 5, that's a lord over the flock, you kind of start thinking, well, I've got to be loyal to the leader and not loyal to the cause. Building an atmosphere of loyalty to a person and a loyalty to the mission and the cause of Christ is lost in that. Wherever the Lord puts us, whatever the mission is, we need to work together. Yes, there's leadership. There's leadership that has to make decisions. There's leadership that has to do certain things. But we better be loyal above all else to the cause of Christ. Christ. And He needs to be preeminent. Right there. Christ preeminent. Not me preeminent. Yes, God appoints leadership. Leadership sets the vision. Leadership drives it forward. But you better build loyalty around that cause of Christ. And then people love to follow, love their hearts in it. Their hearts in it. And that's what the Lord wants us to do as leaders, to develop and to build that. Now,
the people that you just described, the leaders, the yes men. 100%. And the yes men always say yes to the leader rather than to the cause.
Yes. It's 100% true. That is it. So you surround yourself with people that will just agree with you. Why? Because they're loyal to you and they want to look good to you. They're going to agree with everything instead of evaluating, well, what is the cause? How will this affect the cause of Christ? And so then some decisions are made that really end up hurting relationships, hurting people, and it just kind of spirals from there. So Lord, help us to, yes, involvement, yes, we want to listen to them. It takes leadership. You got to make tough choices. There needs to be leadership, but it's together building that loyalty as well. Here's one of my favorites, and this can, of course, be overboard. I'm sure I'm overboard many, many times, so I apologize. But here's a good one, a sense of humor. Believe it or not, you know, a sense of humor is in the Bible. One of my old preacher I knew used to say, if you think God doesn't have a sense of humor, go to the zoo and look at a giraffe. You know? Or go in the mirror and look at me. God really has a sense of humor. One of the kids were talking to me today, and we were joking about my haircut. And, you know, because I can get a little bit growing on the sides and stuff, and then I don't want that. I just go ahead and, Brother Al, we've got the right thing going on. It's good. Anyway, they were like, you know, they're all about doing this, you know, you fade up from the sides and then you have your hair. I was like, I'd do the reverse fade, right? And down here, right? Kevin's got it down to a science. Nice. So, anyway, laughter is a good thing. Go to Proverbs chapter 15. There's several verses about laughter and it being good like a medicine. This is the one I chose is 15:15, the book of Proverbs. All the days of the afflicted are evil. Now, that's just reality. There's evil, there's affliction, there's hardship. It's the sin curse of this world, period. But he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. You can enjoy life in the midst of hardship, and that is hard. It's very, very hard because we're human. When we go through hardship, it's just, it's hard to, well, Lord, you expect me to be merry? I'm not talking about over the top. My brother, when he was at Bob Jones working on his doctorate, this is years ago, probably 20 years ago, 22 years ago. He was older, so they put him in this dorm with graduate students, and all the older students were in this one dorm. And they put you with a roommate. My brother, you know, he's funny, he's just, you know, he was serious about his work. And, you know, if you know anything about us Watt boys and people, we're not morning people, okay? So, like, you know, maybe by the fifth cup of coffee, I might say something. It's a fault, I know, I'm trying to work on it. But I just don't want to be woken to loud clamoring, screaming, and yelling. I just have no desire for that. I'm just going to calmly get awake and get ready and kind of move into the day nice and easy. By the time the kids are here, I'm ready to go. And I go down the hallway, laugh, and cut up with them. But that's why I have to get here early. Morning care, when I used to do morning care, ooh. Yeah, them kids knew to just come in and sit down and not say a word. They were nice about it. But I didn't even ask. They just could kind of sense for some weird reason. Anyway, he was in the dorm. And, you know, he's better at the morning than I am. I'm probably the worst. Daniel, he's a night owl. He stays up all night. He just never goes to sleep. So he doesn't really matter morning or night for him. But he said he had this guy in his dorm room. And he said, I'm all about, you know, happy and joyous and stuff. But this guy was one of those, because they'd get up early, you know, 5 a.m. and they're studying their Hebrew and all this stuff. And he's trying to get ready for the day. And this guy hops out of bed. Good morning, brother. The Lord bless you this morning. How are thou? Aaron was just like. Yeah, that's foolishness. There's a difference between foolish. He was trying to put on a show that I'm just this jovial Mary of all. I tell you what, I'd have been in prison for murder if I was in that room. I'd have been expelled from that school. And I want to tell you that's over the top, you know. And he was always like that. It was like he was trying to manufacture the joyous Christian life. If you have the Lord in your heart, you don't have to manufacture it. It's there. Sometimes we go through hardship and it kind of, we have to kind of search for it. Lord, where's that merry spirit that you gave us? But I'll tell you, I learned a long time ago when I actually was in middle school. I know that's hard again. Julian, it was back in the 1900s, okay, when I was in middle school. And I remember going, I was in elementary, was awesome. You know, elementary school is elementary school. And I got into middle school, well, actually it was junior high, 7th grade. And guess what started happening? You'd never believe it, that students in middle school start picking on each other. I couldn't, but wow. Right? Did that actually happen? Does that happen, Michael? Did that happen when you? Yeah, it did. And I just was like, man. And I'd go, they're picking on me. I'm upset. And, you know, I had a pimple. And everybody was picking on me. Or whatever. You know, I'm just, so-and-so called somebody chubby. Or, you know how it is in middle school. Maybe you remember those. I don't know. It's always some drama, something or the other in the middle school. And it's been that way for centuries of time. I'm sure Adam and Eve's boys at that age probably did the same thing. But anyway, I said, you know what? This is ridiculous. I literally remember to this day thinking this. I was thinking, I'm sitting here in school and I'm miserable because I got mad that somebody picked on me. And I remember distinctly deciding, I said, you know what? I'm going to pick on myself with them and I'm going to laugh and have a good time. And I'm going to tell you, ever since that moment, it's been pretty fun. Had a great time. They just laughed and I said, yeah, I am. I actually did. You know, I just go right with them. And then it was fun. But we, you know, it goes back to what I was talking about 3 or 4 years ago. We want to be victims. We want to be. That is our world in a nutshell. Teach these middle schoolers to be a victim and always jump to an assumption and jump to a conclusion because I want to be hurt. I don't. I want to laugh. Life is more funner. Right? Laugh. Have an enjoyable time. I'm not talking about being silly and stuff. I mean, you know, I've learned time and place for being silly. Right, Chris? We've gotten ourselves in trouble over that kind of stuff before. And I tell you, I had to learn real quick when I came here to work with Chris that we laugh and we cut up and we joke around. And you take yourself seriously, you probably ain't going to make it. It was fun. The first summer I was out there working like crazy and I wanted to make Chris to know I was doing a good job and I was going to work the hardest I could and he'd come up there and make fun of me and I didn't even know he was making fun of me and I was, yes, sir, I'll do it better. And then he's just down there just over there with Wayne laughing at me, you know, and Wayne just, this is back when I actually had hair. Wayne sat there as serious as a heart attack and said, I said, hey, Wayne, you got any stories about Chris? He said, boy, I got stories to make your hair fall out if you had any. I mean, I just met the man 3 minutes ago, and he's just bashing me right off, you know. And I was like, man, this is awesome. I like this. Don't take yourself seriously, people. I know you agree with that. You take yourself seriously, you're going to be miserable. It really will depress you. And that's selfishness. I'm going to be honest with you. That's selfishness. You worry so much about what you think. So if any of you need to get over that and be trained, I've got some certain people in the room I can suggest you hang out with. Now, I know there's extremes. Don't get me wrong on that. But I tell you, there's something to this. Having a collegial nature. I don't know if y'all know me very well, but I'm going to tell you, I get this from my dad. It's unfortunate. I can't wait. My dad's going to be here, hopefully, for the wedding. So he'll tell plenty of stories about me, I'm sure. But my dad, there's one thing about my dad and me, we love to fellowship. I love going out to eat with friends and people and just enjoying fellowship. I love it. I like talking to people. My wife's totally different. She's introverted. She'll tell you that. Her idea of a wonderful evening is alone, crocheting, reading a book. She is happy. Me, I'm like, I'm going to go with my friends. We're going to go play golf. We're going to eat. We're going to, you know, I'm go, fun, yay. Enjoy the life that God's given you. I'm telling you, I won't get off on that. I know, again, it can go to extremes. This general led the expeditionary forces in World War I. It says, always take your job seriously, but never yourself. Somebody said something about me. Somebody laughed at me. Well, good. I've learned if I laugh at myself first, then we even laugh even more. It's fine. I got to beat Kevin to the punch because he's ready to give it, you know? It's enjoy life. I know anyway. Amidst difficulty, a good nature can be an asset. Even in leadership, you walk around. Laugh and cut up and have a good time. Now get the job done. There's seriousness, of course, but you better enjoy it. Lighten the mood. It's all right. Anyway, we got to stop. Let's pray. Lord, just thank you so much for all that you do for us. And that we can serve you. Thank you that we can laugh. We can enjoy life. And that it's merry in our heart. And that we can serve you and know you. And that's a great joy as well. Bless our service this morning, Father, in Christ's name. Amen. All right, thank you.